Welcome to The Rundown. I'm your host, Justin Pugliese. This podcast is dedicated to you, the run community. Each episode, we bring you interviews with top athletes and community leaders. They'll share their stories, tips, and tricks to inspire and motivate you to keep running. Ultimately, we're all just here to have fun, from elite runners to weekend warriors. Find out how people get started and why they keep going. So listen up, tell your run buddies, and don't forget to subscribe. You can find us on Apple Music, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
So that younger self at 14 years old who never thought they could run a 2:34 or even finish a marathon, run for that little girl. Run for your future self when you're like an old grandma and can't run anymore. You know, just to know that you've done this. This is amazing. Run for, and then I think of my parents, my sister, my teammates, my best friends, there's a whole bunch of people. So there are just people, it's just like, it could be a mantra, it could be a word, whatever is meaningful to you, just every K, and I'm not thinking about it for the whole K, I'm just like refocusing.
On this episode of La Rundown, I had a great chat with elite Quebec marathoner, Melanie Myron. She started running at a very young age, and it's clear that her passion for the sport has only gotten stronger. She continues to push herself and strive to bring down her best marathon time of 2 hours and 34 minutes. Mel has a natural talent for running, but still trains hard every day because she never takes it for granted. Are you already subscribed to La Rundown? Running with WRG and still can't get enough? Sign up to their weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the community, hear about exclusive run events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Just go to iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. In this week's news, if you want to gauge how your winter training is going, there's a race coming up on Sunday, February 24th. You can run a 1, 2, 5, or 10K race on a closed course, and it's called the Challenge Hivernal-Île-Bizarre. It's well organized and attended by runners of all levels. Just get out there, have some fun, and pray there isn't a snowstorm that day. In an article I found on runningmagazine.ca, they spoke about how to fight time change when traveling for races. If you're planning on a destination race for 2019, you need to factor in jet lag into your plans and how that may affect your performance. The first thing you should consider is getting to your race destination as soon as you can. The sooner you get there, the faster you can adapt to time change. The next thing you can do is bank your sleep. 3 days before you leave, turn back the clock by 1 hour each day. So if you go to bed at 11 p.m. normally, you'd go to bed at 10 p.m. 3 days out, 9 p.m. 2 days out, and 8 p.m. the night before you fly. 3 days, in fact, is the magic number. Anything more might confuse the body as environmental factors like light and work schedules are still in play. If you're flying westbound, stay up past your bedtime and eat a bit later. If you're heading east, then move up your daily habits a little earlier. Lastly, soaking up sunlight later in the day is key. But if you're traveling west to east, you'll want to do the opposite to avoid grogginess on race day. Make sure to check the show notes for links and more information. That's all for now. Gotta run. We've been pretty fortunate to have some pretty amazing elite female runners on the show so far, and my next guest is no exception. Welcome to La Rundown, Mel Myron.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Happy to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for coming in today. Really, we've been wanting to have you on, and our feedback's been good so far, but you've definitely been somebody that people want to hear, so I'm happy you're in today.
Great.
First question I want to ask you is, were you athletic as a kid? And this is something I tend to ask everybody, but.
Yes, I was. I did a little bit of everything. Like, my parents always put me in sports. I played soccer very young, but didn't really enjoy that as much. I liked to swim a lot. So I was on the swim team. I did skating in the winter, synchro a little bit, synchronized swimming with the pool. I was basically a pool rat.
Nice.
For most of my younger years, all summer. I did a little bit of softball. In high school, I did track, and I also did cross country as well as volleyball and some swimming as well. So I was always playing outside, always aerobically fit, I guess. And always playing sports, but never really a star player in any type of team or sport in general.
And was that kind of you just like to go out and have fun? And
exactly.
This is just something like non-competitive, or were you, because I know now, you know, you're, You're an elite female runner. So it's,
well, when I found something I was good at, so running, I definitely became competitive about it. I always wanted to find something that I could be good at. I remember, being on the synchro team at the summer pool that I used to go to and thinking to myself that I wasn't very good and that I wish I could find something that I would be really good at in athletics. And then as a elementary school student, we had a phys ed teacher named Sylvie who encouraged us to do the Halo race every year. I don't know if you did them, if you were part of the GMAA, but either way.
Is this like elementary school?
Elementary school. So I was running in elementary school, but not training. It was like our training was running around the school once on our lunch break. And then in the spring, we'd run this race. And I still managed to come top 7 my first year out of hundreds of kids. And then second, in grade 5 and in grade 6, I was second as well. So as when you're competing against hundreds of kids and you just have this ability to push yourself aerobically more than other people, you kind of enjoy that feeling. So when I was in high school, I joined the cross country team, and that's when I met my first coach at the cross country race. He was recruiting athletes or runners, and he saw me. I think I came second at that cross country race. There was always one girl that beat me, and she was actually from my school. And she actually didn't go to the practices that we were both invited to. So when he invited me to come to the practice, it was called McGill Olympic Club. So it still exists, but this was in the West Island. I said, yes, for sure, I'll come. But can my sister come too? Because my sister is only 15 months younger than me. So oh, nice. we used to do every sport together. So we both joined together, and that was where it all started. So yeah.
What age was this?
I was 13.
Okay.
Yeah. Because, nice. I'm born in October. So yeah. I turned 13 really quickly into grade 7. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
So the Halo run. Yeah. So it must have been grade 7. Exactly. Mm-hmm. The Halo run's a funny one because looking back, that's something I always wanted to do, but we like had tryouts. Did you guys have that?
No. Yeah. Everyone could do it. Everyone.
Had tryouts at our school. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe because there's a lot of kids that wanted to go. And I tried out for it every year and I never got to go because I wasn't one of like the more, I wasn't as hyper, I'd say, as the other kids.
Right. Right.
But I did like to run. I knew it was there, but yeah, I never got to go. And like, I think maybe that's been a chip. like back from my childhood.
That's too bad. I guess it depends on how big your elementary school was because everyone went.
Yeah, it was St. Paul's. I don't know if you're familiar.
Okay, no.
But
no.
Now I run the mountain all the time, so.
Yeah. Well, we actually got lost. Some of the girls got lost one year and we were all lost up on the mountain. That's when my nursing career, I would say, started. We were about three girls up in front. And the woman that was supposed to tell us to turn in to the finish would probably... she was out watching her son start his race because the guys were starting after us. And then the top 10 girls, we kept running. And then in grade 6, you're not really aware of how long 2 kilometers is. And then you're running and running. And at one point, you're like, this is impossible. And the girl behind me she's having an asthma attack. She's having all these wheezing sounds in her lungs. So I like slowed down to come next to her. I'm like, okay, you're going to breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. And then I'm like, this is impossible. I'm like, we're going to stop and walk now. And we called the girl in the front that was going to win. We're like, stop. Like, we're pretty sure we're lost. Like, this doesn't make any sense. We haven't seen anyone cheering on for us. We haven't seen a finish line. We haven't seen, you know, any directors to show us where to turn. So we're clearly lost. And then, yeah, it turns out top 10 girls were lost. So,
no.
So that's where my nursing career started.
Really?
Well, helping the girl behind me breathe.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Is that really where you found out?
No, I guess I had it in me to help people or something.
Nice. Cool.
Instead of just keep trudging along and trying to push forward, I guess.
Yeah. Right. Who cares what happens behind you?
At that point, I was like, what?
People safety first.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So when did it start getting a little bit more competitive for you, I guess, at that point?
So I would say when I was 14, a year into training with Mr. Spence, Alexander Spence was my coach at the time. That's when I became quite serious. And I would say my dad had an influence on me because at the time we would train with the club on Monday, Wednesdays, and Saturdays. And I wouldn't run the days in between my workouts. I would just go to the pool, swim, do other stuff. So clearly I had a good aerobic fitness. My dad was kind of like, well, Mel, if you want to improve at running and your times, you need to do some running in between. So just easy running, a 5K or something. So I started doing that, and then I saw the results, and probably just continue running. I just kept seeing results. And then I remember being at a provincials and coming third, and I was like, wow, like these girls I never thought that I could keep up with, I kept up with during this 1500. So I just kept getting more and more confident as I kept running and kept seeing the results. And yeah, so I would say I got pretty serious around that time. And around 15 years old, I went to the youth championships in, they're called the Legions in Calgary, and I won a gold medal in the 3000. So, and I'm sure, yeah, there was a lot of girls running the 1500 and shorter distances, but yeah, the longer events, it was, I was quite dominant at that time. So, mm-hmm. But I guess the amount I was running for a 15-year-old was quite a bit. And my coach at that time was known for training us quite heavily. So, and I was always ready to work and do the work. So I kind of took it really seriously early on and just saw the results and kept pushing myself.
And you got to be a kid too at the same
time. Yeah. So that was kind of like where my downfall was. And I know one of your questions was about, you know, what was a challenge as a younger athlete, and that was, or what did I learn? And that was, I didn't know my limits at the time, and I pushed myself a lot and tried to be a perfectionist in a lot of areas. And I didn't really, I watched a little bit too much how I was eating. I restricted myself. I identified a little bit too much as an athlete. Like the athlete became every part of my day, and it is now, but I'm much more balanced in that. It's not my complete identity, but as a 14 or 15 year old, your brain is not developed as a 33-year-old as I am today. So, I find that, you sometimes have a more immature approach to training. It's all about going hard all the time versus listening to your body and resting. And I didn't really respect the rest part of training. So, and the recovery. So making sure that I was okay, on my easy runs, I'd go out hard every single time. It was like an 8K time trial every easy run. It was like just go hard all the time.
Yeah.
And then just eat only healthy foods and not even put salad dressing on your salad, like avoid all fats. I just had this idea, and it got to be an obsession. And at one point you burn yourself out mentally and physically, and that's what happened. And yeah, so definitely I had to take a step back at one point. And around 16, at one point, my body didn't, first, your body doesn't let you keep pushing that way. I ended up getting injured. And then eventually, as you try to come back, and then my mind was tired emotionally. I was tired from everything I was putting myself through, just burning myself out, basically. So then eventually I just wanted a break. And I would say I took a break for a good year.
Okay.
Yeah.
And this was a pressure that came from yourself?
From myself. Nobody around me pushed me. It all came, it was very intrinsic, and it still is, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you have the learning at least.
Yeah. At that point in my life, running really controlled me. And now I find I have control over my running instead of the other way around. So, and I take the other points of running really like the recovery part, and that the workouts are important. They're a piece of the puzzle, but all the other things you do in between are really important. So, yeah.
Can you expand on that a little bit? Just because I think for a lot of people, and I'm with you on the, you know, before I had a coach, before mm-hmm. I knew anything about running, I was signing up for half marathons, and that was all my runs were the same. Go mm-hmm. as hard as I can.
Mm-hmm.
Make every run feel like race,
mm-hmm.
like a race,
yeah.
And try and get faster every single time you go out. That's completely the opposite.
Right. And it's, yeah. And it's not really, it's intuitively, you don't think intuitively, that's what you think you need to do, is just go out and run hard every day to improve. But it's not. And I've learned that with my coach that I have today, with John LaFranco, that, his motto is always run more, mainly easy, rest up. So a lot of, like 80% of your running is easy running. And what does that mean? It's active recovery. Active recovery is really important. And the risk of getting injured from easy running is really minimal, so you may as well do it that way. And I'm pretty hard-headed and stubborn, so it took me a long time to learn to do my easy runs easy. But I did, and I'm better at it now, and I just go out and I don't look at my watch. And if I do look at my watch, it's usually because I'm excited. And I'm like, okay, Mel, slow down a bit. Like, you don't need to be running this fast. Like, so stuff like that. But during marathon training, which we'll probably talk about later, but during marathon training, I'll definitely, there's no choice. My easy runs are easy because the amount of volume in your legs and the long workouts, they just take everything from you. But in general, I would say that I learned to run more easy. Focus on the workouts are important, but that they're not the only important thing. The recovery and everything you're doing in between is really important too. So it's really just about balancing the quality and the quantity of running that you're doing and then doing everything in between that's really important. Mm-hmm. So
nice.
So yeah.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the more you learn, the better you get at that and right. honing that. It's like, it's mm-hmm. funny when people say like, oh, I can't run with you. You know, you're too fast. I'm like, yeah, but if it's my easy, like yeah. easy run, like I'm just chilling.
Yeah. Like, we're going to talk the whole time yeah. and it's a different mentality than other sports where, because high impact sports like running, you need to give your body that break because it's not like swimming where you can probably go hard every single day because aerobically you can handle it, but physically your body can handle the low impact exercise. But for running, it eventually will lead to injury. So you mm-hmm. learn the hard way sometimes. And if you can learn the good way and just listen to your coach, that works too. But
yeah, for sure.
Sometimes there's a reason why we get to where we are. And usually it's because you're someone who works really hard, wants to do the work, is really motivated. But those are the same people that might make the bad decisions to work too hard at times too. So
of course.
Yeah. It's just about finding that balance. And the more mature you can approach things, the better. And mm-hmm. it's just sometimes that's why I guess you improve at an older age too, especially in the endurance events, because I mean, there's a whole probably physiological reason behind that.
There is.
But but also the maturity that comes behind the endurance training and listening to your body and knowing when to push and knowing when to hold back and
patience.
Yeah.
Was there a moment where you said, because I know you mentioned the 3000 and the 1500, mm-hmm. was it just because you like to run and that's what you were getting put into, or did you want more longer distance?
Well, as like a 13, 14, 15 year old, well, at 13 and 14, yeah, 13, 14 is probably 1200, 2000. Those are the races we did on the track. And I would say around 14, 15, I would do some 5K races, but never longer. And then I think my first 10K, I was 19. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one summer I decided at 19, I think we were having Canada Games in 2005 in Regina. And I was kind of someone like at one point after I kind of took the year off, I'd kind of come in and out of training. So every summer I'd want to train hard again, and every spring, and then winter would come and I would get demotivated by the weather and do other stuff. But so that summer it was going to be Canada Games. And I was thinking, oh, well, this is the last time I'll have the chance, because next time I'll be, I think the age limit is 23, so I'll be too old. So may as well do this my last time around. So they had a 10,000. So that's that summer I trained for the 10,000. So that was the first time I trained for a longer event, was when I was around 19. And I ran like 37, 19, I think, something like that. Yeah, not bad.
Not too shabby.
I got a bronze medal. I was happy with that.
So when you're talking about these medals and stuff, was that all through school, or is there?
That was through my club. Okay. So in the Montreal area, compared to, I guess, the U.S. and stuff, a lot of times the best runners will have, it won't really be through their school, because I find that the school programs and running, and maybe that's changing now, they're not very strong. So our high school didn't have a very strong running team, so I trained with my club. So a lot of the best runners will train with their club and not with their school. And then when university comes around, then yes, you train with your school. But I think things are changing now in the high schools in Quebec, and I'm sure there's more teams in the Cégep and in the high school. But when I was younger, there weren't a lot of high school track and field teams, and it was a sport that not as many people were interested in, I guess. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
But I think I think it's coming back, you know, in Quebec, there's a lot of interesting things happening, and yeah, so it's fun in Quebec City.
When you're talking about high school teams, I think our team just wanted to like represent. Mm-hmm. Like be part of a meet, mm-hmm. but we didn't have a team.
Yeah.
So I did volunteer to go, and I ran at Claude Robillard.
Okay.
And
okay.
I think I ran the 3000.
Yeah.
But like I got my butt kicked, you know, like you think, okay, You know, you go in with running shoes, like not running,
no shoes. No spikes or anything.
And you get these kids that are just like...
Those were the kids that are all part of the clubs that probably had their spikes and knew what they were doing.
Decked
yeah,
out.
Yeah.
And like, I'm hanging...
That was me.
You know, I'm hanging in there like the first, you know, first K or K and a half. And then it's like, you know, that's when they open up. You know, there's a whole strategy.
Yeah. 3,000 is an intense event, but it's still aerobic. So you need to have that aerobic base to be there at the finish, you know, it's tough. But yeah, I would do all those competitions through the school, through the high school, but all of my training came through my club. It wouldn't have been what my high school was doing, but I would represent my high school at those events at Claude Robillard.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like, I only know you now as a like half marathoner, marathoner. Mm-hmm. And I think we met through Ariane, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just in training and, mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So is that, do you miss the short stuff or are you now like, I know you're running marathons and with Chicago and all mm-hmm. these great mm-hmm. things, but is this your preference now?
Definitely. I enjoy the road better than track. I do miss the track. I like track workouts. I like the intensity of it. I like doing 400 meter repeats on the track. It's just so satisfying. It's something I grew up doing. I do like it. Do I want to race on the track? Not generally, but I'll do a 10K on the track. And some of my best 10Ks have been on the track, generally speaking. So if I get a chance to run on the track and I feel fit, I'll do it. But definitely, it's not that I don't want to. It's just at one point you need to choose where you're going to focus most of your energy. And it gets frustrating because I try to run a fast 5K now and it doesn't happen. So
it's not easy.
And eventually with the marathon and your legs and you only have so much time in the year to focus on the speed again of running like that type of 5K work that, yeah, I don't get enough of it in the year anymore because I'm focusing on longer distances that when I do run a 5K, it frustrates me because I think I should be able to run faster based on my other times, but because I don't focus on it, I don't. And that's okay. And I have to be okay with it, but I'm not. But no, yeah. And generally speaking, if anyone asked me to do indoor track right now, I'd say no, I don't miss the indoor track.
Yeah.
But, for training, I do enjoy the track, for racing right now, I prefer to be on the road. There's something about the road that I love as much as it's competitive within the elites. It's also fun just to be, part of this huge event. Like those huge marathons are so exciting because there's people from all over the world that take place in it. And you get to run the same race as so many other people. And you get to connect with so many people through that. And a lot of people pay attention to it because they're doing it as well. Whereas track gets a little bit more, less attention because of the, I guess it's much more elite in that, only a select amount of people will run track, whereas there's a lot more recreational road runners than track runners. So it's fun to be able to run the same race as the other recreational runners and to have done the exact same thing as them and to get to actually communicate and get to know other people as the back, other people that are at the back of the pack as well.
Do you enjoy that then?
Yeah, like, yeah. I like, it's just being part of something that's so much just bigger than yourself. It's fun. It's this huge event. And you know, you see people are still running hours later after you're done and you're like, wow, this is amazing. It's for everybody. And it's fun that everybody takes part and that everyone's out there for their own goals and their own reasons. And it's okay. It's for them. And everybody is out there chasing whatever it is they're trying to chase, whatever goal it is. It's fun. I like to be part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are you chasing now?
Right now, well, I would like to better my time in the marathon for sure. If I want to make it very specific, if I could try to make a world team, that would be really exciting. And I think it'll take something faster than what I did at Chicago because there are women that have run faster than me this year. So I think it'll take a 2:32. But the way I'll approach the next marathon is just go out and race. And
you're at 2:34.
Yeah,
Chicago.
Yeah,
that's the best.
So if I could better my time, that would be great. Like you know, I'm doing this for myself. I'm doing it for my own personal goals. So if I can keep improving my own time, like everybody else in general, that's what I'd like to do. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's not easy. Eh? The training for marathons, like where do you get, so you do most of your training outdoors?
I do most of it outdoors. Yes. I rarely go on the indoor track. I did a couple times this winter. But generally speaking, I try to find, I have some spots that I run outdoors, and like in Westmount area, we have a 2K loop that my team goes up to, and we get tired of it by the end of the winter, but it's where we run. There's lots of little hills and it's pretty much dry all the time. It's just about getting the work in, and we get it done up there and that's it.
So. Is that where you work speed?
We have like a tunnel that we do speed in uphills. Okay. And if I want, last year I did some work at the indoor track in Vaudreuil, just cause I felt like I needed it for confidence, just to feel the turnover, and to feel like I was running faster. So once in a while I might do some workouts on the indoor track as well. But what I am doing this year is going away this winter for a month to try to get some better conditions to run in.
Amazing. Yeah. So where are you heading?
To Flagstaff for a month from February 15th till March 17th. So
beautiful.
So yeah, should be fun.
That's great.
And just the added value of being up there at altitude and getting those benefits as well will be nice. So cool. It is cool up there, but better running conditions in general. And then the added effect of altitude will hopefully make running at sea level easier or feel easier.
You went last year as well?
I went 2 years ago in January 2017. And last year I went to Park City, Utah with basically a Quebec team. So it was a lot of Quebec athletes that went in the summer. But this year I chose to go away in the winter because I'm doing my first spring marathon. So I figured May and June is not, it's fine to run in Montreal during that time. So if I can choose a time where, it's less motivating to, or even harder to get the type of running I want to get in due to conditions, I'll try to be out of the country.
And did you find it made a big difference? Like
last time I felt really strong when I came back from Flagstaff. I would say about 2 or 3 weeks later, I felt so amazing in workouts. Unfortunately, the race that I wanted to do to test my fitness was the first half, and it got canceled because of snow. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to run. So I went all the way to Vancouver and it got canceled. But I felt amazing in workouts. I ran a good 10K in not so great conditions. So I think there was an effect there. And Park City, I didn't really run very well afterwards. I came back, I ran a race 2 days after coming back from altitude. And because that's usually the theory, is you do a race either right away or you wait a little bit and you do another race. And I went out aggressively because I had an aggressive goal. So it might have been that. I still didn't run poorly. I just didn't run the race I wanted to. So it's hard to say. But then I ended up running a good marathon months later. So in the end, I think it all is a cumulative thing. If you get your month to focus solely on running, focus on all the little things and be 100% selfish with your time. Because when you're home, it's hard to. There's always things that you need to be doing and want to be doing. You want to be with friends and family and all of that. But when you're at a training camp, you can focus solely on training and everything. All your time is for you. So I think it's valuable to do that. Even if, let's say, you don't see the result right away, I think you can see it months down the line, just having had that month away to just focus on a good build. Or for me, when I was in Utah, I focused a lot on doing shorter distances and speed and 5-10K work. So that might have had some impact and made marathon pace feel easier when I decided to restart marathon training a month or two later after that. So everything, you know, you're just always building fitness. So as long as you're doing it and staying healthy. And I think some of these training camps allow you to work harder than you would at home, especially if there's added variables like altitude or heat or whatever it could be. So you can do the harder work because you have more time to recover in between. So, and I think even if it doesn't show right away, it'll benefit in the long run.
Yeah. It's like a pro, like a real pro.
Yeah. Well, I don't think I'm a pro, but I think, I try to approach it as seriously as possible. Yeah. And it is, it is something I want to do as well. You know, mm-hmm. like I want to get away and focus solely on running for a month, because right now it's the conditions outside are insane.
Horrendous.
So yeah, it's been a really crazy winter.
Yes.
It just hasn't been stable. One day it's nice. One day it's raining. One day it's snowing. And then it's just, it's been a hard year. It's been a really hard year.
But so. You always get out in that stuff, right?
Oh yeah.
Like I always, like I've learned like from my coaches, they tell me like go out in the garbage weather because,
yeah.
you know, like Boston last year, probably the worst conditions I've ever been
outside
in.
Oh, yeah, it's true. You ran
in.
Boston. Wow. Yeah.
But probably the worst condition I've ever been outside in.
Yes.
Let alone running a marathon in, you know?
On the start line, I can't imagine. That must have been miserable.
So, like, do you always go out and make sure you get your workouts in? Like,
generally speaking, I don't let weather stop me. But, you know, if it is impossible to run, like if it's a sheet of ice or if there is a huge risk of injury because I'll fall, then I'll go on the treadmill. And I would say this year is the year I use the treadmill most, which frustrates me, but it is what it is. And sometimes, you know, some really good runners use the treadmill, you know, some moms that are marathon moms that can't get out because they have their kids in the house and they do their workout on the treadmill and they end up it's still a good way of stimulating an aerobic work. It's just, I think maybe biomechanically, it's not 100% the same, but if you have to do some workouts on the treadmill, it's not going to hurt you. If you can run outside, it's probably better, but if you can't, well, that's second best. So do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been using the treadmill quite a bit this winter, unfortunately.
It's been cold.
Yeah.
It's been
yeah.
so cold.
The cold, I don't mind. It's really the ice sometimes.
So what are some of the hacks for the cold that you like to, if you could share anything?
Yeah. I wear a lot of layers. Mm-hmm. I really like the Lululemon pants and all the layers that they give me. I really, really layer up really well and I don't stop. I just keep running and that's it. And it gets a little uncomfortable, but you know, it's part of the sport. You're never going to be 100% comfortable all the time when you're racing either. You're either going to be too hot. You're going to be too cold at one point, maybe, usually not, but mm-hmm. you know, I've run races in Houston. I remember a couple years ago, it was cold and I never really warmed up throughout the whole race. So, you know, cross country will be cold as well. So, you know, you have to get used to running in conditions that you're not comfortable. So I go out, And I do it. So definitely I would say some of the challenges are fueling, you know, in the cold. Like in the summer, it's nice. I can set up a bench and fuel for my marathon training. But now I take more gels. I'll take some gums and stuff like that just to practice taking in sugar and stuff during my long runs at marathon pace, even in the colder weather, even though it seems to I don't need as much fluid, but I still need those calories. So, and that's just all practice. So it's, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. I just keep practicing. Yeah.
That's really interesting you say that. Cause I think that's something not a lot of people think about necessarily when they're going to go and run their first half or first, whatever race they're doing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you get gels on course. We drink a lot of water on course. So it's good to try these different things out. Like, mm-hmm. is that something you've always done or like?
My first marathon, that was in 2014 and at the Montreal Marathon, I didn't practice very much. And I would say that was one of my downfalls, but that's okay. It was a learning experience. I think the first marathon always is, as long as it's not so terrible that you don't want to do it again.
Give yourself a break.
Yeah, exactly. But the second one, I definitely practice. And the third one, I think I have my fueling strategy down pat. I don't know if I like the marathon just because I get to drink and eat during. Maybe that's why. No, but what I do like is just every 5K, I get a bottle or I get like some type of fuel and it just divides the race up. So if you know, like it just, yeah, it divides the race up and every single fuel that you're taking is important for your performance. So if you just value that and take the gel or take the Gatorade that's on course, if you're an elite and you get your bottle, take the bottle. And just come and look forward to that next bottle and know that it's going to do you good. So I don't know. It divides up the race in my head. I know I'm nourishing myself. I know this is going to, it's for the long run and the last 10K, this is when I'm going to need it. So yeah, I practice and I have my formula. I take about, I try to take over 60 grams of carbs every hour. So I get my, in my bottles, I take 15 grams and then I'll have a gel two or three times on top of it. So there's quite a bit of, I take quite a bit during. So
it's nailed down to the.
Yeah. Yeah. I nail it down and I try to take more if I can. But those things, you have to practice because it's another, you have to train your gut to be able to handle it. And doing it in different temperatures is important too, because I think if it's hot out, it might be harder for you to digest some of the sugars. As far as I know, I'd have to read up on it a little bit more, but just to practice in every condition that you might have, because like if it's cold, well, you might not feel tempted to drink, but you're still losing fluids. You're still sweating, even if it's coming right off your body, it's not dripping, but you're still sweating. So you still need to focus on taking those fluids, you're still burning calories. So you still, and maybe even more because you're trying to keep your body warm. Mm-hmm. So you need to keep taking in the carbs. So
I think some of the nursing maybe comes into play too.
I really, and like the whole carbo loading thing, I take it really seriously the couple of days before. Yeah, I get really hyped up for the marathon. It excites me. And I like that there's so many things I have to do to prepare for it and all the details of it. Whereas obviously there's a lot of other details in other racing as well, but there is this whole other nutrition factor about it that's super important while you're racing because of the endurance event and the endurance aspect of it. In order to run strong in the end, you need to have all those calories available. You can't be completely depleted. So
it's a ritual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's your go-to carbo loading meal?
I have a lot of pasta.
Yeah.
Just pasta and tomato sauce. Like not too much fat, not too much extra protein. It's just a lot of carbs. And the amount of carbs that you need to consume, it's really, and I eat a lot. It's a lot. It's, and like I can't even get the amount of carbs in me that I need. I need to drink Gatorade instead of water that day because that's just the extra sugar that I need to carb up.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, I know. It's nuts.
Yeah. The formula is 10 to 12 grams per kilogram per day for 48 hours. So to all you runners that want to carbo load, so it's a lot. If you weigh like 50 kilos and that's 500 grams of carbs a day. And if you start looking at stuff, it's like a banana is 15 grams of carbs. A cup of pasta is probably a half a cup is probably 15. So you need quite a bit.
Yeah.
You need quite a bit.
It's serious, you know?
It's like over 2000 calories of just carbs, not including, you know, some protein and fat that you also need in your day. Mm-hmm. So
you drink a lot of water too?
I try to. Yeah. 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 Generally speaking, I'm always thirsty. So
that's not good.
Yeah. No. Yeah. I try to drink to thirst, but I'm always thirsty, but I drink a lot of coffee. Maybe that's a problem too.
Oh yeah. Dehydrated. That's crazy.
Yeah, I try to drink a lot of water. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Is there anybody now in training that is there anybody you look up to, first of all? Because I'm sure there's a lot of runners, men and women, that look up to you just in Quebec alone. Is there anybody that you look up to that you're kind of chasing, or maybe somebody that pushes you in training too?
Mm-hmm. Who inspires me? Well, I would say in general right now, you're always going to be inspired and motivated by someone who you can kind of, you see yourself in, let's say. So I'm inspired by a whole bunch of people, but who motivates me, I would say, are people that I could see my own story kind of similar to theirs, because that motivates me to think that maybe I can achieve what they've achieved. So someone like Krista Duchenne, who started off by running a 3:30 marathon, and then eventually over the years she ran her 2:29, and she was a mom and she took breaks and she had tons of injuries that she had to get over, and she was always so resilient and came back. And someone like that, staying focused and doing the work, and might not be as talented in the shorter distances, but in these like really endurance events, she kills it, you know? So she might not have this, really fast, 10K time, but she's managed to run this incredible marathon. So, and she still does. She came third last year in Boston. So people like that really motivate me. Who inspires me? Well, honestly, everyone who's out there working at their goals inspires me. Everyone on all my teammates inspire me. You know, the masters on my team that are aiming to do a PB, whatever they're aiming for, they inspire me. Having them at my workout with me, it inspires me to keep pushing. It makes me accountable. Just having a couple people show up at the workout, and even if we're all at different levels of running, we're not all elite, but that's okay. We're all at different points in our life. Some of us have kids, some of us don't, some of us are students still, some of us work full-time jobs, some of us don't. So in the end, we're all there to achieve our goals, and we all inspire each other. You know, I run mainly with guys because we're kind of like training partners. So even one of my training partners, Nassim, he's like aiming to do an Ironman. So he inspires me to think, wow, he's going to have to, you know, run a marathon after biking and swimming, or swimming and biking. It's going to be insane. So he inspires me, just his goals and why he's trying to run certain distances at certain times. He has, I want to run a marathon in under 240 because only 1% of the population can do that. I'm like, well, you know what? That's really cool. I'm inspired by that. Go. And like, we run together, and everybody that shows up, on a Saturday morning at 9 a.m., you know what, if you're there, we're inspiring each other. When if we're doing our 2K loop and one of us is passing the other one, and you just look at each other and you see that other person working just as hard as you, even if they're running slower, that person is inspiring me because we're out there working together. That's what it comes down to. But who motivates me? Definitely it's people that I feel that I could do something similar. Mm-hmm. And even someone like, and it's so fun that like even some of our best Canadian women right now are not very, especially in endurance events, are not that young. So we have like Natasha Wodak, who, you know, came back to running years ago, and she's in her late 30s now and running amazing. Lindsay Tessier, who's 40, who ran 2:30 in Berlin. All kinds of women are running amazing right now, so it's fun. And Sasha Golish as well, she's running, she's in her 30s, late 30s, I believe. She must be older than, she's a couple years older than me. So all these women are still excelling at the longer distances. So it just gives me hope that I can keep doing this, even after kids or what have you, you know?
Amazing.
Yeah.
And your group is really nice. Like I've ran with them a few times and they're really good group. And it's exactly that. It's like different levels, but you all show up and you can all, the next, you know, the person that can push you is always the one just in front of you.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
And I think that's, you know, even though you're, 200, 300 meters away.
Yeah.
I'm still looking and trying to.
Even like Francois Jarry is way ahead, but I'm happy that he turns around and he comes around the bend faster than me, but I see his face is full of snow all in his eyebrows, and he has this painful look on his face. I'm like, okay, he's hurting a lot right now and I should be hurting the same amount, and I am. So it's just fun to have. I really am more motivated, and I think we probably all are, but generally speaking, I work a lot harder when I'm with a group of people, and I'm definitely motivated by people's energy and having people around me working hard. And even when Ariane gets to come out and run with us, and we have different coaches, but at the training camp, I'm so happy that we'll be able to work together for a good 2 weeks because, you know, just having another woman to train with, that's different too. It's fun to have another woman training for the same event as you to run with, and you can be friends, you know, on the during training. And then when it comes to the competition, you're competitors, but then after, once you cross the line, we're friends. We're here to help each other. And without each other, we wouldn't be pushing as hard. So
that's what you need.
Yeah.
You need it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And is it, you find it's that really that switch? Like, is it?
Yeah.
When you toe the line, it's like game face.
Yeah. And it doesn't mean I won't work. I will work with that person during the race, but generally speaking, yeah, I like to, be as, I'm as competitive as I can be with certain people. I'm not going to be unrealistic about who I'm competitive with. So if there's someone who I know is way stronger than me, I'm not going to go out and try to beat them. It won't be my goal. I do run really within myself, and I am competitive against others, but I will always be more competitive when I feel good. So generally speaking, if you're feeling good during a race, that's when you feel like you can push past people and make a surge at a certain moment, et cetera. And But if I know there's certain people that are around my level, I will be competitive with them. But if they're not at my level, I'm not going to be disappointed if I don't beat them. Mm-hmm. But and I'm not intimidated either if there is someone who is technically a better athlete than me. And if I see them in the race, I'm not going to hold back and think, oh, well, that person's supposed to be better than me. What am I doing here? Like kind of happened in Chicago where Gwen Jorgensen, who has this goal of winning the Olympic gold medal and who's training with BTC, like she's put herself in the best position to run really, really well. So BTC is Bowerman Track Club. So it's an elite track club. Gwen is, she's an Olympian, and she won the gold medal in the Olympic distance in Rio, I guess. So after that, when she decided to, I guess she did what she had to do in triathlon, she decided she would go over to the marathon. So she's training with Shalane Flanagan. She's training with all of the best endurance athletes. All of them, BTC has a really good coach and really good, you know, obviously she has all the resources she needs to run really well. And she's a professional athlete, and she was running Chicago. When I found out, I told my coach and I told him, like, don't say beat her. Cause he always jokes around. He'll say beat her. I'm like, okay, shut up. Like I'm not going to beat her. And then 25 came to the race. I see this thin, tall woman up ahead. I'm like, that's Gwen. And I'm catching her. And like, so when you're feeling good, and I was, I just went for it. And at one point I was leading that pack, and at one point I just pushed forward and kept going. And she was probably, you know, having a harder time that day, and maybe next time it'll be the other way around. Who knows? But all to say, I didn't let that intimidate me. I just kept pushing forward. And the person themselves doesn't intimidate me. It's just how I'm feeling in that moment. If I'm feeling like the effort is more than I can sustain for a long time, then yes, I will be very intimidated by what's happening around me. It's very normal. If you are feeling really horrible and you don't think you can sustain this pace for another 5K and you don't have the confidence to do so, well, then you're going to start to freak out a bit. And that's when you need to calm down or adjust and figure out what you're going to do. I'll be really nervous if I'm running and then I know someone with a really awesome kick is right behind me, because I know that's not my strength. So I'm going to be freaking out a bit at that moment. But it's not because that person is a stronger, it's because I know that person does have a stronger kick than me. So I'll be intimidated by people, I think, at the right moments, but not when I'm at the start line, because in the end, it's anything can happen on race day. Someone can break a foot. Someone can fall. Someone can blow up. So you need to go out there believing in yourself.
Yeah. And yeah. You look at, like, Boston was a perfect example.
Exactly.
Right? It's like Dez and
Sarah Sellers was second.
Yeah.
And she's a full-time nurse. Yeah, you know?
Unbelievable.
Even Krista Duchenne was third. And Krista didn't even know she came third. Like, she crossed the finish line and they're like, third. And she's like, third master? And they're like, no, third. And everyone was freaking out.
Third,
she's
like, third.
What? Because in those conditions, you're almost like, you don't even know you're winning sometimes, because just everything. You don't even probably notice who you're passing at the end of a marathon, where you're probably so hypothermic. No. You're probably not fully
just
aware.
Just get there.
Yeah, you're just getting the work done.
Yeah, yeah. Just get it over with.
Yeah.
Like, get me there as fast as possible.
Yeah, yeah. These are people that, like, she just gets the work done sometimes. She has three kids at home, and I know she takes running very seriously, but I'm sure there's moments where she's just getting the work done, and she doesn't have the best sleep the day before, the best condition. So that's why she did so well, because she was just getting the work done that day. And that's mm-hmm. what it comes down to. You go and you do the work on that day that you can do, and that's it. That's all you can do.
And do you think, and first of all, I thought of you and Ariane mm-hmm. last year in Boston, because mm-hmm. I was like, looking at the female times, I was like, even the men times, mm-hmm. I was like, ooh, that might have been been something. You don't know.
You never know.
We come from, like, Dez comes from, she was Detroit, I think.
Yeah.
And deals with the winter, and like, when you deal with that kind of weather, you know, you're dressed well for it. You can train in it. You can run in it. And I did think about it. But my question for you was, when you're getting ready to run a marathon, mm-hmm. Do you just let it go? Do you just let it fly? Are you checking the watch to make sure you're on schedule? Mm-hmm. Is it more of a feel thing, or is it really like on every K you're doing your checks?
Well, I always go for, I have a plan going in. I have a plan that's really objective in terms of, like, this is where I want to be at 5K. So I'll have all my 5Ks where I, and like what my, I would ideally want my splits to be. So let's say for Chicago, my goal is 236. So I want to be going through the 5Ks in 1830. I think that's what it is. I'd have to readjust. I would have to look at what it is, yeah. But, and then I would just like, and it's pretty easy. So I don't want to be looking at my watch every K, but if I could get an idea every 5K, that would be nice. So I have those. And then another thing I'll do is divide up the race into, usually what I do is 5K splits. So every 5K, it's just like I'll divide it up and that's where I get my bottle. And that's where I kind of reset my mind. Well, we've got through 5K. And then how you feel mentally is completely different on the race and how you've prepared for it sometimes. You can visualize a lot, but I feel like generally like if you're excited and you're feeling good, then generally then things can just go into, you feel like everything's flowing and it's going as hard as the effort is, you feel like you have control of the situation. So then what I usually do is a last 10K, I always have like a countdown and I have things that I write down just to refocus myself. Cause I know that that's where you can lose the most focus is in that last 10K from 32 to 42. And I know it could be lonely. Sometimes you have nobody around you. It's not like, well, at least for me, it's not like a track race where everyone's so close in the last, usually speaking, usually in a 10K things spread out, but generally in a 5K, there's people around, but in a marathon, you could be find yourself alone. So how are you going to refocus? How are you going to, so it's always about zoning in and zoning out. So zoning out could be focusing around on the people around you. Zoning in is like, how is my breathing? How is my, so some ways of just, instead of just always thinking, let's just get to the end, let's just get to the end. I try to refocus. So I have like this, I always think of 10 things and it's usually sometimes it's people. So I read the book Peak Performance by Steve Magnus and they said to run for something greater than yourself. Sometimes it can help you. So some people that are very religious might think of God. For me, it's more people in my life that I'm really thankful to have. So, and then other things like my first thing would be like run for your younger self. So that younger self at 14 years old who never thought they could run a 234 or even finish a marathon, run for that little girl, run for your future self when you're like an old grandma and can't run anymore, you know, just to know that you've done this. This is amazing. Run for, and then I think of my parents, my sister, my teammates, my best friends, there's a whole bunch of people. So there are just people, it's just like, it could be a mantra, it could be a word, whatever is meaningful to you, just every K, and I'm not thinking about it for the whole K. I'm just like refocusing. That's how I refocus. Okay, we're at K30. I have that person in my mind or that mantra. I'm thinking of it. And then, okay, refocus. Okay, breathe. Okay, yeah, Mel, you're losing focus. Refocus now. Okay. And obviously, if you're racing someone, then you have that focus. But if there's nobody around, this is how I can try to keep my legs just going.
Yeah.
So generally speaking for Chicago, I would say because there's every 5K, there's a big board that shows your time. So I was going through the 5K 30 seconds fast and I was like, oh, Mel, you're making, and I tend to start a bit aggressive. And I like that aggressivity because it makes me get into the race right away. And I'm, and as a runner, probably shouldn't tell everybody this, but, I'm scared to start slower and faster because I'm afraid that I won't be as aggressive because just starting out a bit more aggressive can push through until the end. But anyways, how you run in workouts is how you're going to probably run in races. So generally speaking, I run workouts a little bit aggressive at the beginning, and sometimes it's harder to maintain the pace at the end, but everything takes practice and you can always learn how to approach races differently. But generally speaking, the way I've approached the marathon is I start out at an aggressive-ish pace. I was 30 seconds fast and then 10K, I was a minute fast. I'm like, oh, Mel, you're making a mistake. But I'm like, just go for it. And then I was so inspired by the times coming out of Berlin, like Ariane who ran 239 and Tessie who ran 230. So I was like, you know what, Mel, if they can do it, you can do it too. Just go. So I kept every 5K, I kept being 30 seconds off, a minute, like 30 seconds off. So I was like, okay. And then I went through the half in 1:15:54 and my PB is 1:15:51. And I'm like, oh God, Mel, you're making a huge mistake. But then I started passing people who were blowing up. So I was like, okay, well, and then you just feel good because you're passing people. And then you get to 30K and then I do my countdown. And then I'm like, we're done, Mel. Just get to your countdown. You're and home. I was never, yeah. And I was never overwhelmed by the amount of time because I was so prepared. I guess everything had gone pretty well in terms of training. I was prepared to run 2:34, I guess, because everything just kind of, I didn't negative split or anything. I did slow down, but I didn't slow down to the extent that showed that I blowed up. I just slowed down gradually, which made sense. If I can run a little bit more even next time, I'll be set. But hey, you never know what'll happen next time. I can run slower, hopefully not, but you know, sometimes you have races that'll go better than others, and the marathon is kind of that race where you don't get to do very often, so you hope you'll get a good one because you don't get to do another one for a while. But sometimes it doesn't happen and you just have to keep sticking to it. It doesn't mean you're not fitter than you were last time. It just means that you didn't get to display it on that day, and there might have been other circumstances. And yeah, that's the part of the sport, is you have to execute on the day. That's kind of what I like about the sport too, because sometimes things come up and underdogs do well, and vice versa.
Yeah.
I was saying, I never got overwhelmed by the distance. I remember the first time I looked at my watch, it said 1:32. And I thought to myself, I only have 1 hour left to marathon pace. This is a workout now. And then I just thought 20 minutes at a time, because our workouts were often divided into like 20 minutes of marathon pace, or sometimes we'd have 40 or whatever it was. So I was like, okay, 20 minutes at a time. Mm-hmm. So as long as you can like find, but you have to feel good in order to be able to manage your mental space. So
I think the preparation.
Yeah.
You know, trust the process. Yeah. Trust everything you've done until that point, because you can't do anything more.
Yeah.
And like you said, like after that, it's like running the 2:34. Yeah, I was trained for that.
Yeah.
You know, the rest was up to you.
Yeah. And you don't realize it when you're doing the training, because the funny thing about marathon training is you never run the distance, or at least at that pace. And you might run at marathon pace in total, like 20 something K, and you're thinking, how in the heck am I going to double this in real? And then you taper and you do it. And that's what it is. It's just learning how you should feel before the taper, making sure you're really well fueled. And then hopefully things line up on that day and you're blessed with good conditions and whatever it may be, because you might not be, and that's something different. But in general, like, you need to, trust the work that you did. It's all in your legs, and then make sure you're very well rested after that taper, because that's where it'll all come together.
For sure.
That hard effort.
And, and my coaches say the same thing with regards to that day, that magic day.
Yeah.
Like they've done, you know, Ultraman, triathlon, and 18 Ironmans. And they said, you know, they've had though that special day once, you know. So like it really is true what you're saying, is that, you know, everything just aligns. Mm-hmm. And you know, you might be undertrained or overtrained, and but you might just cut that race like butter. Like it's just, everything just flows super well.
I've been lucky. My last two marathons have felt like that.
Yeah.
After Toronto 2017, I thought, okay, running 2:39 under sub 2:40, I don't have to run any faster ever again. Like I would like to, but if I don't, I'll be content. I'll be happy. And then after Chicago, it only made me more hungry, because it's just closer and closer to like these real crazy goals that I have. So I'm like, wow, I could maybe do something even better. But then, you know, maybe my next one won't go as smoothly. And I'm realistic about that. I don't want that to happen. But hey, it might. And there's ups and downs. And that's part of the sport. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, as a marathoner, you don't get to do your event as often as other distances. So you, you cherish the times that go really well and try to remember those, because,
they're few and far between.
Yeah, exactly.
What's something that you've done that you never thought would be possible?
Definitely the 2:34.
Yeah.
When John said 2:35, I'm like, you're nuts. Like, can you please stop being unrealistic?
Yeah.
And then I ran under that. So
It's so impressive. Like, we're so proud of you. It's like,
thank you.
Like just the fact that I know you and Ariane too, it's like, I get super inspired by it, because I'm like, man, like they keep chopping away at this thing, you know? And
that's fun too, I guess. In the marathon, you can chop off big chunks because it's such a long event versus others. But yeah, it's, Yeah, it's fun. It feels surreal a bit, but at the same time, we've been doing the work, you know? So it just makes sense too, I guess. But and the more I see people around me running faster, the more it doesn't seem impossible. Like, I don't think what I do is special. It's not. It required a lot of work. And I think it's something that with years and years of just building and slowly maintaining patience, staying healthy. I've been lucky enough to stay healthy this time around. I've had a few niggles that have been bothering me, but hopefully we'll be able to get a good build in here as well. So if you can keep yourself healthy, then you're set. But, you know, setbacks happen as well, and setbacks are okay. And sometimes they give you more motivation to push further. Mm-hmm. And they make you really realize why you're doing this sometimes. Cause
it's not easy.
It's not always easy.
You make it look easy, but it's not easy.
Yeah, it's not. Even for us, it's not easy.
Yeah.
We just do the work cause we know we have to do it. If we want to perform, we have goals, and if we want to perform at them, then we have to do the work. If not.
So what's the goal now after realizing that 234, like what's, how fast are we going to go?
Yeah. Well, you know, if I just want to take it one race at a time, and if I can, you know, it's like, I kind of gave myself in 2016 when I graduated from my master's, I thought to myself, running has really picked up. I've improved quite a bit. My 10K times have improved by a minute every single year. 2014, I ran 36:50. In 2015, I ran 35:15 and then 34:17 or something in 2016. So I'm like, hey, like, what if I keep doing this? Am I going to just plateau here? And if I do, that's okay. But if I don't, like, maybe I can keep improving. So we'll see. And then I knew I wanted to go and try to run the marathon again. So after that, I made the decision, I'm going to stick this out and keep working at it. Whatever seems logical, like, I work as well. So I'm like, okay, I'm not going to give
up full time, right?
I work 3 days a week.
Okay.
So yeah, I've kind of cut back my hours, and I'm really fortunate to have a team of other nurses and doctors that work with me that are okay with me not working as much in the clinic itself. I take a less smaller patient load because I work less days. But in general, I know I could go back to that eventually full time. But for now, I figured, hey, now's the time. I'll give myself these extra 2 days a week of extra rest and just getting to be more flexible with my running and doing it in the day if I want to, and getting to sleep more and all those other recovery things that we spoke about. I can focus more on that. And I don't think it was completely, I don't want to give up my job completely. I like the balance of getting to refocus on something else during the day too, and not just think about running. So, and I do like my job, so it's fun to have both. But as I was saying, in 2016, I made the decision, okay, I'm going to really take this seriously until 2020. Like, I'm not saying I want to make the Olympics. I want to make the Olympics, but I'm not saying that I think I deserve that, or I think that that should be the big goal. But let me just give myself that Olympic cycle, that 4-year cycle of training, and see what happens. And it's not just, and we'll make goals along the way, and depending on what makes sense, because there might be setbacks, there might be this. If I take this more seriously, maybe I'll get injured, maybe I won't, who knows? But I'll give myself that 4 years and stay the course. And so far, it's only improved. And right now, I'm ranked 6th in the marathon. I have the standard for worlds, so it was 237. So technically, I need to be top 3 to go to Worlds in Doha this October. There's 2 women, Melindy Elmore and Sasha Golish, that ran 232 in Houston in January. So I either have to run faster than 232, or there's other people that might do spring marathons. So there's a ton of stuff that can happen. I can run faster. I can run slower. Other people that haven't ran a marathon yet can run a spring. Like, I'm going to do a spring. I'm going to do Rotterdam.
Where is that?
In the Netherlands.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, there's tons of stuff, but all I can do is focus on me. And I think if I just go out with the same approach as I did for Chicago, go out and race, I should be okay. You know, you really have to just go and do the, just focus on yourself and try not to focus on everybody else, because you can start getting freaked out that this person's doing more. That person ran this, that person ran that. Well, you know what? They can have a bad day. They can have a good day. You can have a bad day. You can have a good day. Just go out, do your job, and try to be as competitive as you can be on that day. And that's what I will do to try to make a team. But if it means that I need to make a time, maybe at one of my races, one of my marathons, I'll go balls to the wall and just go for the time that I need to do. And if that's what it is, I might have to blow up, but I have to try.
Yeah.
But I don't think that'll be the approach for Rotterdam. I think the approach is still to try to run fast, but we haven't really established any set time that I need to do.
Okay.
But if I could run a 2:32, I would be very confident with that, thinking that maybe I can make the world team, because I think that's what it'll take. And for the Olympics, I don't know, but I think it'll take a 2:30 to go.
Okay.
So that could be the goal. But I think we'll see what happens. And if I don't make a world team, these are all good problems. I could run another marathon, a faster marathon. Worlds is going to be in Doha in a desert. In 30 degrees, run at midnight, because they're going to do it in the dark when it's not daylight.
Hot.
Yeah. So I don't think times will be very fast. If I made it, I would try to heat acclimatize here and run in the summer in layers and whatever I have to do. But if I don't get it, don't run there, well, then I can do a fast marathon in the fall. I can do Berlin. I can do, you know, so there's always, I still get to do this sport, and I'm pretty positive about everything. I want certain things, but at the end of the day, we'll see what my body gives me.
And you don't know if you don't try, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you have to set the goal
and
reach as far as you can.
Yeah.
And that may happen, and maybe it won't, but you don't know if you don't put the effort in to get there.
Yeah.
And that's what got you here to this point, right?
This is all like just the tip of the hierarchy of needs that we have as humans. It's just like, for me, it's just a self-actualization and self-accomplishment. And I'm really internally motivated, and I'm not really externally motivated. Like, winning money for races is great. It's always a bonus, but it's not something that drives me. I'm not going to go scout out races that have money. And like, if I win money, it's great and whatever, but I'm really internally motivated to better myself and my time and all of that. And I think sometimes marathoners, it's good, because you need to be patient at the beginning of races. So just running within yourself sometimes can be a strength, and just keep doing that. And yeah, we'll see.
That's
all
awesome.
It's all part of the fun, eh?
Yeah.
The unknown.
and is that what ranks you? I was thinking about why you were talking about it, but is time what ranks you?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's time. So, the way that you qualify for Worlds is you have to run the standard and then come top three in your country in terms of time. But for the Olympics, they were thinking of maybe, and we'll see what happens, they were thinking of going by IAF points, which is a completely different way of qualifying. So it's based on the amount of points that you get based on different marathons. So any major marathon, you'll get like Chicago, New York, or whatever, you'll get more points for those marathons than any other marathon. And then if you come top eight, you'll rank higher in your IAF rankings. If you, the faster you run, the more IAF points you'll get. So that's a different way that they were thinking. The Athletics Canada was thinking of qualifying for the Olympics. We don't have a trials like the US. US, they have like standards, and then they'll have an actual day that are trials. We don't have that. This year in Toronto, I think they have announced it that the winner will be an automatic qualifier for the Olympics.
Interesting.
So that'll be fun on the guy side and on the women's side. But yeah, maybe that'll be something I'll consider if I don't make Worlds. I don't know. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
These are all...
That's where we ran together, actually.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, not together, but...
Yeah, but same race. Yeah. Same race.
I saw you coming back.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a fun race. I liked it because there's a lot of out and backs. There's two out and backs. So I could see some of my training partners running while... Like, I would come around the bend, and there was a lot of my teammates were doing Toronto. So it was super fun to watch them coming around and motivating. When I would see them, I'd actually surge... It's crazy.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just like all of a sudden that leg, you don't feel the legs anymore.
Yeah. I remember there was one turnaround. I don't know where it is. It's around 30 something K, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I saw some of my teammates. Yeah.
Before you hit the bridge. And then
yeah.
after the bridge.
Yeah, you see, I don't remember very well races. I'm too much well, in my
looked,
head.
You look like, I said, hey, Mel, and I didn't I don't get think, much of a reaction.
No, but probably I saw you and I surged because I felt your energy. I saw you. I knew you were there, but maybe I didn't have enough energy
you
to respond.
Fierce, that's for sure.
Yeah, fierce. Yeah,
that's amazing. Yeah. So what's the big race for you this year? Is there one in mind or you can just
so, yeah,
play it by
I'm,
ear?
I'm doing Rotterdam, so that's a plan. So the plan is to go to this training camp for 4 weeks, hopefully get some good work in there, come back, start my taper, well, 3 week taper, kind of slowly, and then go to Rotterdam April 7th. Mm. That's the plan.
Amazing.
Yeah, so we'll see. And then try to fit in a short little summer season of track, maybe some 10K, 5K, like whatever. And then a fall, depending if I make a team that, if not, we'll plan for another fall marathon.
Cool.
I think this year is a marathon year. It's my first time doing two. If all goes well and yeah. I don't get injured,
amazing.
I'll get to do two.
You're so good at it. You got it.
I hope so. I
up.
Love it. Yeah. Yeah.
It's so much fun.
Yeah.
Can you describe what running means to you?
Running for me, honestly, it's just the best way I know how to push myself in every aspect of my being. So mentally, I push myself. Emotionally, I push myself. Physically, I push myself. There's not one other thing that I do that touches all three of those things. Like my job definitely touches the mental and emotional part of myself, but not the physical, you know, because I'm nursing. I'm not, you know, using my body really. So it's the best way I know to push every aspect of my being, and it makes me feel the most alive. So even when it comes to just easy running, it makes me feel alive. I feel my heart beating, I feel sweat, I could either focus on something or I can completely, like on an easy run, completely just drift off, not think of anything or think of my problems. It like if I had a bad day or like a hard day at work emotionally after a run, I feel some or any issue in your life, you feel so much lighter after a run emotionally. It's nice. And then physically you just get to feel your heart pump.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah.
And what advice could you give somebody that maybe, you know, maybe is just running recreationally or, you know, looking to run their first 5 or 10, or maybe is run a 5 or 10 and is looking to take the step or the leap to a you know, a bigger distance
to improve.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be like, obviously what my coach always says, it's like run more, mainly easy, rest up. And I would think like finding a good coach, because often with your long-term or whatever your goals are, with your goals and long-term goals in mind, because finding someone who can, you know, help guide you and give you a good plan is really important, I think. So get yourself a good coach and learn to run more easy, like we were talking about, and not just going and hammering every single run. Mm-hmm. It's all about doing those paces that are either faster and it's just doing paces that are faster and slower than your actual race pace. And then eventually that race pace happens on race day.
It just pushes everything forward. Yeah.
Yeah.
I learned that a couple of years ago too. And it's, I didn't believe it at first, but
yeah.
Yeah, speed work and like easy running.
Yeah, so you go faster than race pace, slower than race pace. And sometimes you're always going a little bit slower than race pace and it sucks. Like in the marathon, for example, you don't always hit the pace you want. And then eventually it comes together on race day. So it's just about, finding a good coach, I would say, to help you with your, and then like making sure to do all the recovery in between and mm-hmm. and resting and being patient.
Great.
Yeah.
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 Any shout outs, any like sponsorships or anything like that you want to share?
Well, yeah. Well, thanks to Boutique Endurance. They're, you know, supporting me for the training camp and also with some gear. So that's super fun. And they did a nice, so the training camp is basically paid for through them because they paid my flights and the fundraiser that they did is basically going to pay for my lodging and the car that I'm renting while I'm there. So it's great. Like though that's really been helpful. So it doesn't have to come through my pocket or my race earnings. Mm-hmm. Obviously my team, Athletisme Ville-Marie, I couldn't do anything without my coach, John LaFranco, and all my teammates. And then, who else? Also Lululemon Montreal. They give me a lot of great gear. And my husband is really supportive and he gives me a lot of massages and massotherapy Adam. Nice. So yeah, all these, I couldn't do it with that team of people, you know.
Cool. Yeah. And where can people follow you? Like Instagram or even Facebook?
So yeah, I'm on both Facebook and Instagram. I'm not super active on Twitter. I like just retweet things that I want to read later on. but I'm Mel Myran, M-E-L-M-Y-R-A-N, like Nancy D, like dog, for Instagram. And then Melanie Myran on Facebook. So I usually will add mostly everyone that reaches out to me. So, amazing. And I have an open Instagram account. So yeah, cool. Follow me there.
I appreciate it. Well, we'll be following along, and like good luck with everything. Hopefully we get to train again soon.
And
thanks for coming on today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. It's always fun to talk about running.
Absolutely. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Are you already subscribed to The Rundown? Running with WRG and still can't get enough? Sign up to their weekly newsletter and always stay connected. You can learn more about what's happening in the community, hear about exclusive run events, and stay up to date with the podcast. Just go to iamarunner.ca and subscribe. Simple as that. You'll never miss a beat. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Rundown. We hope you enjoyed our show. Please make sure to visit us at iamarunner.ca. You can also let us know what you think and follow us on Instagram at The Rundown. Now take what you've learned and run with it. The Rundown is a production by WRG Media, recorded in the historic RCA building in downtown Montreal. Produced and recorded by Forrest McKay. Our executive producers, Leslie and Lindsay Woods. Graphics and illustrations created by Ryan Bondi and assisted by Mark Grimberg. Marketing by Jill Garcia and hosted by me, Justin Pugliese.